Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine Podcast Radio. Join us on our journey into the past, the present, and the future as we explore the relationship between technology and humanity. Together, we are going to find out what it means to live in a society where everything is connected and the only constant is change. Knowledge is power, now more than ever. BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com. Devo unlocks the full value of machine data for the world's most instrumented enterprises. The Devo Data Analytics Platform addresses the explosion in volume of machine data and the crushing demands of algorithms and automation. Learn more at devo.com.
All right. Marco?
Sean?
I think we know knowledge is power.
Oh, now more than ever.
Which
is kind of like the headline we've been using lately.
It's not reserved for a certain few. Everybody needs knowledge at every level, across the board. And obviously, we look at raising awareness for cybersecurity connected to society and technology as a whole. And to fight the good fight, I'd say, in business and in government and beyond, we need to bring as many people in as early as possible and give them the skills to participate. Right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not for nothing that we call this channel the Academy. I mean,
it's funny how
we didn't call it XYZ. And what is really interesting is that lately our audience has become, I think we've been able to bring in a younger generation into the conversation. And I think this is really important. We can't wait that somebody come out from college and with a computer science to go into cybersecurity, because by now we know that this is not the reality. We need a lot of variety of skills. We need a lot of soft skill, whatever they call it that. I am not sure, but maybe this is part of the conversation today. And we have two great guests with us. So I would love for you, Sean, to do the honor.
Absolutely. So we do a lot with our good friends at RSA Conference, and we're going to continue to do that. And one of the programs we really appreciate is the whole college and university work that our guest Cecilia Marinier does. We're thrilled to have you on, and you are going to be our co-host today. You introduced us to a very special guest, Kim Jones from Arizona State University. Maybe a few words from you, Cecilia, and then we'll get an update from Kim, what he's up to.
I'd love to. So yes, thank you guys very much for hosting this program. Thank you for letting me be a co-host of the program. I am very excited to see all of the different opportunities that are coming out to educate the next generation. And a couple of things I want to highlight before I introduce Kim is just some of the security scholars that we bring to conference, which are selected by the universities, including Kim's university, have also started working on programs to actually do outreach to younger students as well. And I'll point to a couple of programs that I think are interesting. One was called CyberHer. It's out of Dakota State University, and they are going after middle school and high school. You have, I have another security scholar, Kim. I don't know if I ever told you about this, but Corey, who's down in Mississippi, came out of Mississippi State. She's starting a thing called boot camp, and she's taking 18 to 19 year olds right out of high school who would generally not get a college degree, but giving them a full year of coding and cybersecurity experience. It's going to be awesome. And then I have another cybersecurity student out of Pittsburgh that's also doing some great work they're trying to get some boot camp in the high school so that the students can actually get some of the skills necessary to actually work in the field. And then we have, of course, our college students that come like what Kim did. And I think what's very fascinating, before I get to you, Kim, is just talking about the fact that the industry itself is really open right now to thinking about new ways to get students to come into the field. And you don't necessarily have to have a four-year degree, or it might take you 8 years to get to that four-year degree, but you're going to start in high school, or you're going to start even younger. And I think what we're trying to figure out is, like, what are the skills that people need in order to actually succeed at this? Where can you start to get going into this field so that you have at least a baseline that people can then look at you and want to hire you? And I want to take a step back, though, before we get into some of those skill sets and that skills ideas, Kim, and just have you talk a little bit about why you started your program at Arizona State and what you thought were the most critical skills your students would have in order to be successful in this field.
Fantastic. So as you know, Cecilia, my background is operational. I am actually a former chief security officer. I've got 34th year in security, intelligence, and risk. I spent, 10 years sitting the CISO chair in various organizations and various heavily regulated industries and professions out there. And I still do CISO mentorship and CISO consulting in my copious free time. What I found when I was last sitting in the chair was, in addition to the difficulty in getting highly skilled professionals in anywhere in any field that has the level of shortages that we do, as I was looking to colleges and universities out there, I was getting great technologists, usually out of the computer science fields, who were enamored with the possibility of hacking for a living, for lack of a better term, who understood the code, understood the tech to a small extent, didn't understand how to operationalize it, had a lot of theory, had a lot of binary, well, if you do it this way, it will do what you need to do from a security perspective. Well, I can't do it that way. Well, then you can't be secure. Didn't understand governance, didn't understand process, and were absolutely horrific at trying to communicate highly technical concepts in a very simple and straightforward manner. Conversely, out of some of the, and I don't use this term to be derogatory, but some of the other adjunct or ancillary security related programs out there, not necessarily in the CompSci field, which all produce very, very good students and high caliber students, I had people who understood process and tech. I had people who understood compliance. I had people who did not know how to go deep within the technology stack, so that as you tell me I need to do something to be compliant or to pass the audit or to meet this requirement, if I sit in front of you as an engineer and say, well, how about if I do this, will it meet the requirement? You'd get a lot of, I don't know, but you still need to meet the requirement. And we're equally challenged in attempting to communicate those complex compliance and process issues in a cogent and clear manner. Mm-hmm. And this was very frustrating to me as I was looking to bring people on in a very fast moving environment. I spent about 4 years in my last gig sitting in the chair trying to get people who are universities actually to say, hey, I have money. Let me give you money. Can you go build this for me?
Right.
And I admit freely, there were several universities that I spent time with, including at one time the one I'm affiliated with now, who I couldn't get answers from. So just about the time I was getting ready to retire from the CISO chair and was looking for my next adventure, I was commuting cross country to do the role. Arizona State was looking, and particularly the new College of Interdisciplinary Arts and Sciences, which is where I'm affiliated, was looking to build an industry-facing cybersecurity program and came to me and asked me what I thought that program should contain.
Yep.
So I spent the better part of a day with them and went through the, here are the challenges, here are the pieces and parts that I think a good cyber warrior needs to have and how you appeal to various individuals. And the dean of the school at the time, a woman named Marlene Tromp, who's now president of Boise State, said, "That's great. What do you think about coming in and doing it?" And I'd always said that when I retire eventually, I was going to put on the tweed jacket and see if I could give back, because I'm an educator at heart. I like to make things better, and I like to help further the next generation, because eventually I'm going to be too old to be doing this. I hadn't thought about doing it at this point in my life, but I looked around and said, okay, my kid just graduated from college. I was able to do things financially so that I can't fully retire, but I'm okay. I'm now debt free. Why don't I give this a shot now? So I went to Arizona State for 2 years and became the principal architect of one of the three cybersecurity degrees that we have. And with the focus of, I want the folks that come out of our degree program to have all of the holistic skills that they need, as well as a requirement for real world experience. And in building that program and founding that program, that's actually how Cecilia and I met.
Right. You guys, Sean and Marco, jump in whenever, but I just want to get into a couple of points here that you brought up. One is this discord between, you know, you have these practitioners that understand some of the actual fundamentals of the computer science or how the stack works. And then you have these other people that are actually executing on it. And then there's language in between that's been missing. And the second piece is that you have CISOs that know what they need and what they want, and colleges that aren't quite matching that need or want. And then to build a program that can kind of do, you know, here's the language translation, and here too is the skill sets, like having the capability to actually get out there and do apprenticeships and to get hands-on real life experiences so that they know what they're getting into and they know what they're doing. And I think that's attractive to the program. Oh, sorry, go ahead.
And I want to double down on those. And Marco and Sean, I hope this is okay for us to go back and forth. I don't want to cut you guys off. Okay.
I'm just chilling here and learning.
Okay. I want to double down on those two points. The disconnect for me is truly one of the hardest challenges that, and was a frustrating challenge for me when I was sitting the chair. You know, having been in academia for a couple of years, I understand those pieces and parts and where part of that frustration is, because it's really hard to put this square peg that is cyber into any of the round holes that are out there in academia and truly create worthwhile, accredited, high quality academic programs out there. And I believe New College, because of its interdisciplinary approach, is probably one of the few that was able to do this. Because how do I tell a computer scientist or a computer science program that in addition to all of the credits that you need to stay accredited for comp sci and cyber, I need you to teach people some basic level of communication skills, because knowing how to translate these concepts is important. How do I tell people that understanding the theory is important, but I need some idea of how to operationalize that in your forensics class, or I need you to create a security operations class? You know, how do I tell people, you know, again, in the computer science program, that they do need to understand governance concepts and risk concepts out there, because having the greatest piece of tech that I can't make compliant or secure is really no help to me, yet still have enough credit hours baked into the program to run an accredited comp sci degree program? That can be a hard sell, and it can be hard for well-meaning, well-funded universities to do. So, you know, New College, by definition, takes a look at things interdisciplinarily. So we have a good college of, you know, math and natural sciences within our school of math and natural sciences within our college. We also have several humanities schools within our college, so that we could, within the single college structure within the university, get all of those pieces and combine them together in a relatively easy fashion. So,
well, You guys throw so much into the conversation that I'm taking notes and I'm like, okay, this is going to be my next question. And then I, no, scratch that. I'm going to go in the next one. So in a way that I can, I don't know, maybe concentrate everything in one observation is the fact that being an expert in this field, like in many other fields, it kind of like put a blind on the side of your eyes, and you don't see everything else that happened around you. So if you're like very high technically skilled, and like you say, Kim, at the beginning, but they don't understand how to communicate. They don't understand that if there is a problem, maybe there is a way around that problem. Then you realize that this has become what it wasn't seen at the beginning to be, which is, it's not really much of a tech industry related field, but is a little bit of everything. It's fluid.
Yeah, and I don't want to downplay the importance.
Oh no,
of
I don't mean
tech,
that. Oh no, but, absolutely. But what,
yeah. And what you're saying is absolutely correct. What I used to say to folks is, look, making lemons out of lemonade is easy. The job of any true cyber professional is to make lemonade out of two apples, a grapefruit, and a kumquat, and make it look easy. Mm-hmm. And that's what we do. You know, if the problems were easily solved by just the tech, you know, I'd either be out of work or I could do my work within a 40-hour work week, and I wouldn't be getting called in the middle of the night to, you know, deal with problems and issues that are out there within the companies that I work for and support. The challenge is there are very good reasons for companies and organizations who have missions to maximize their shareholder value, stakeholder value, or to do great and wonderful things to service our community that prohibit us creating a technically locked down solution in order for them to operate. So how do I reduce the risk of the bad guys getting in while I can't do what the theory says? And, oh, by the way, do it in a way that's elegant, doesn't slow down the business, and doesn't cost 50% of our profitability for the next year. Yeah, that's the role of a cyber professional. And, oh, by the way, how do I sell that solution internally to executives and management who don't speak my language? So, yeah, welcome to the game. That's what we do.
And Kim, I want to stick with this for a minute, because I think generally speaking, when we're speaking to InfoSec practitioners and the security leaders and CISOs, there's a desire to connect to the business and have those business level conversations. But I feel we're still in the detect, protect, respond phase and not doing very well in the upfront definition of defining the business objectives with security in mind and implementing the solutions to drive business growth with security as an enabler. And I'm wondering how, because you're in arts and science, I'm wondering how the arts perhaps plays a role in defining and architecting and building a business that's security aware, kind of getting away from the reactive protect, detect, and respond elements of what we hear of quite often.
Well, in both, so applying the other side of my brain to the, you know, to the less hard science side of my brain, and my wife, who is a painter and a published author, you know, may disagree with this very, very simple explanation, but art is designed to tell a story. Now, it's designed to evoke a feeling or tell a story that's out there. It's designed to create some level of connection or connectivity out there in some form or fashion. So and I put big air quotes around this, the artistic side of the business is designed, or of the profession rather, part of what I need to do is tell the story, and part of what I need to do is connect. And yeah, the purist who wants to sit in the lab and do nothing but code and not be bothered with this, there's a place for them in this world. And there's a role for them in this world. But understand, every day that I go to work, somebody is paying me, which means on the profit versus loss scale, I'm considered a debit not a credit, because that's money that's coming out of pocket. I need to be able to show the value proposition of what I do to the organization. And let's face it, folks, there aren't a lot of people who've gone out of business for security breaches. In fact, I have to be hard pressed if I could find one who's gone out of business at any level scale for security breaches. Worse, as we become more data driven within this environment, the public has become more forgiving regarding data losses in the environment. So yeah, there are a million jobs unfilled here, but every day as you become a senior professional in this career path, the question that needs to be asked is, how am I showing value to my business? How am I creating that value statement for the person who is paying my very not inexpensive salary? You know, how is this tool, how is this service, how is what I provide at the table providing value to the organization I support?
Yeah.
And that conversation has to be told in a way that connects with my audience, who is nowhere near as passionate or, let's face it, as focused or skilled on this problem as I or the people who work for me are. So what I need to do is I need to be able to understand what it is they do, why they do it, and then link my story to theirs. You know, when I was sitting in the chair, people used to ask me, you know, if you're a new CISO, what's the first thing you used to do? And I say, I'd buy a $500 Starbucks card. And they would look at me quizzically. And I say, okay, people don't normally have time to sit down for a meal, but everyone's got time for a cup of coffee or something. You need to go and grab the true influencers within the organizations, not necessarily the leaders, but the people who really get things done within the organizations, be it the assistants, the admins, the project managers, et cetera. And you'll find them as you start talking within the group. And you sit them down and you buy them a cup of coffee and you ask them three questions. What is it you do to generate revenue? Because even not profits have to generate revenue. What are the things that keep you up at night? And I'm not just talking about security things. And then if there's one thing that I can do within the environment to help you sleep better, what is it? And what I have found in decades of doing this is you get about 60%. One, you get a good education on what the business truly is within the environment. So if you want a quick education and understand how the business works, have those conversations. And then you really get about 60% usually coalescence around, here are the big issues people are concerned about. And I can start showing immediate value if I can actually find ways frictionlessly or with as little friction as possible to solve those problems. You know, those are easy wins. The challenge that I have is I get lots of folks out there who truly don't think about having those conversations, relating the value of what we do, but they're absolutely exquisitely expert at telling me how insecure I am or insecure I am. And that bothers me. And Cecilia, you've seen this.
I know. And I love this because actually I feel like this is a perfect piece for people who are in their mid-career. And I love it. I want to take this little nugget right that you just gave and share that with so many people who are looking for that. How do I get to the next level? But Kim, going back to just going as to why you started this program and the skill sets that you were looking for in the students who are coming in. And I'm going to give a little background on my side because I come from the opposite of Kim. I have a degree in public policy and in, you know, psychology and political science. And so I come from a social side of the social science side, where Kim comes from the more hard science side. And one of the things that I know about our industry is that there's a place for everyone and you have to go find your place and you have to recognize what you like and why you're interested. So for me personally, I'm interested because I like to think of what does the adversary want to do? Why are they doing what they're doing? Where Kim might look at it and say, how did the adversary do it? And then recognize where that adversary came from. So there's two different sides to this equation. Kim, what I want to ask you is, like, when you were looking for students to identify for Security Scholar, what kind of students were you looking for? And what were the skills that they had? And why did you choose them? And And I think we could start there with those kind of big global ideas of like, what should students be doing?
Well, you've asked several questions. So let me answer the first and then let me answer the second. How did I choose curiosity, passion, and creativity?
Yep.
In order to do this job, you must be curious. You know, by definition, I don't accept anything at face value. I cannot accept anything at face value because I'm looking for not only the holes out there that the bad guy might exploit, but I'm looking for creative solutions. Yeah, I know this tool is designed to do this.
Right.
Can it do this other thing that's not necessarily within spec and is about 5 degrees off normal? And if it could, you know, could I get some really neat results for that? Because that's how I solution. Now, I'm looking for people who are very passionate about the work and making things better. I believe, and there are easier ways to make a living in technology. You know, I mean, let's go back to the early 2000s when I took my first CISO gig. You know, let's talk about the interview for the CISO back then. You know, it basically goes something like this. So we're going to make you in charge of security. You're going to ask me for a certain budget. I'm probably not going to give it to you completely because I've got operational issues. You're going to tell me to do certain things that I'm not going to agree with because I think they'll be interfering with the issues. But if something goes wrong and is breached, you're the guy who's going to get fired. Do you want the job? And most of us, and think about it, most of us who have sat the chair for 20 years ago, there was a whole lot of that within the environment. And we came at it with a passion, a true passion for making things better. You know, yes, there's nothing wrong with, you know, being lucrative and being a very viable career path, but there are easier ways to make money than cyber, and you must be passionate about what you do. And I'm going to tell the story, and I won't embarrass her, but I will tell the story of one of our young cyber scholars, and Cecilia knows exactly the person I'm talking about. We dipped deep, and normally we take juniors and above. This was a freshman who applied. And when we put her in front of our committee to review, the basis of her essay was, look, I'm taking cybersecurity because I have an interest in making things better and stopping human trafficking. As a senior in high school, I did my internship with the local police department and attempting to stop human trafficking here in Arizona. I want to learn more about this so that I can sit here and use technology to help people stop doing bad things to people. And it's like, yes, you know,
right.
You need to go. You know, right. You have a passion about making things better. You know, every one of us said, yeah, this is an easy sell. And Cecilia said, this is a freshman. I sent Cecilia this is her essay. And Cecilia said, yes, send her.
Yeah.
So, you know, that level of curiosity, that level of passion, you know, regarding the work, those things are absolutely huge for me. I cut you off, Sean, please.
No, that was a great story. And I'm glad I didn't interrupt too much so you could tell it. But what I want to know is that certainly there's a number of people that have a passion for something and a vision and a drive for a particular area, but may not always connect it to technology and cybersecurity like scholarship recipient did. So I'm wondering, is that something we can teach, and does it, and how do we do that? And I'm going to go back to the story you were telling in the CISO chair, where you're trying to connect what you're doing to the business, and you described it in storytelling and in a conversation. And I'm wondering, are we having those types of, I'll call it role-playing conversations in our career?
That's a great question. You know, there are a couple of things within the curriculum I help the architect, and that I would encourage everybody to both at the collegiate level as well as the high school level to attempt to embrace. You know, one is this thing we call creative thinking. We talk a lot about the need for creative thinking. That's that two apples, grapefruit, and a kumquat thing. How do we truly demonstrate it within our academic environments, And equally importantly, how do we embrace it? I mean, I'm of a certain age where, you know, the kids who were finding different creative things to do that fell outside the lines were the ones who were the troublemakers out there. You know, these are the ones, you know, they weren't being malicious. It's just, well, they were asking, well, what if I do this? And why can't I do this? And why can't this one? I need that person. Okay, that's the nature of what we do. We do not traditionally embrace that in many of our academic programs, in many of our academic pathways. One of the things that we've tried to do at ASU and that we encourage within cyber is, you know, I need that out of the box thinker. I need that creative thinker because that's the person who's going to solve my problems. That's part one. Second thing is, and I'm a technologist, and I'm sitting here right now with five different technology type devices. I've got two phones, a laptop, a tablet, a reading tablet, and another screen sitting on my desk right now, right in front of me. We've lost the art of communication within our environment, within our lives and livelihood. COVID isn't helping in some cases, but we've lost the art and understanding of the need to be able to communicate levels of complexity in a very clear and cogent fashion. You know, when I first launched this program, I was teaching very, very senior technology students, and I said, explain this to me like I'm a six-year-old so that I can understand the concept. And I had very, very smart, academically proficient students who would vapor lock. Or say, write this down for me in just a one pager. I just need a paragraph here that makes sense. And I had very, very smart, academically proficient students who couldn't compose an email without technobabble. And the art of communication has become a lost art. It needs to be reinvigorated within our programs for cyber because, you know, if I can't explain to you why this is important, then don't sit there and look at me when I don't give you the $150,000 you need to fix it because you haven't told me why it needs fixing other than you're pulling your hair out about it and here, hand me a ream of paper of logs to go look at and say, here, you'll see it, you understand it. And that happens a lot still, which is bothersome. And I apologize, this is a passion point for me. So yes, I'm standing on the soapbox.
No, and I love your point about the creative thinking because honestly, the adversaries are getting more creative. And if we don't start to embrace people with different perspectives and different backgrounds, and you know, then we won't be able to actually fight the good fight. We need to have a lot of different people from a lot of different walks of life and ideas. And I love some of the stuff we did with the Security Scholar Program. Kim's been with me from the beginning, basically helped me design it. And the idea of really looking for people that are coming from, you know, different age groups. There were bachelors, masters, and PhDs. There are women, there are men, anything you can imagine from all over the country. And it is in that moment when you see that all of this diversity and just, you know, all the backgrounds, like whether they're in digital forensics or they're in law about privacy and security, you're seeing all these people and they all have the same passion that he's talking about. And the idea about that passion is that they want to solve this problem. They see it as, you know, our whole lives are all interconnected. And if we don't get this right, how will we actually continue to live at the lifestyle we've become accustomed to? And so I think it's a really important problem to solve. And I love the fact that there's a place for everybody in cybersecurity, no matter what you do, and no matter how much education you have, you can come because you will get rewarded if your whole goal is having creative thinking, like coming at the problem from a different angle, and also having just a passion. Because oftentimes what I've heard, and Kim will tell you the same thing, is that you can train the person on some of the technical parts, but getting the person to have just these other skills behind them is what really helps your whole workforce get smarter, better, and more equipped to go ahead and fight the good fight.
Well, amen. You know, Kim, what you suggested before when you're like, you know, I gotta be a problem solver, I need curiosity, I need to break stuff apart to make it better. You describe a hacker mentality, a hacker mindset, which is kind of ironic that we think that we don't need that skill when we're actually fighting those kind of people. And that concept of being a hacker mind in order to to be in cybersecurity, I think is essential. And I'm gonna let you jump on this because we're also getting close to wrapping time here. So as you think about the answer, Kim and Kamane, how do we tell this story to the kids out there, the younger generation that think that being in cybersecurity is such a boring environment that you just really need to be a computer science? We need to be able to tell those stories as well, not just to the board.
Oh, good God.
But to the kids.
No, I agree with you 1,000%. I so fault my profession for this. And it's a point of consternation and anger for me in that regard. There was a day and age where in the younger years of our profession, when we were coming up in security, there was a mindset that, well, we could manage our way out of this problem. And this is about assurance and policy and process. And we lost our technical depth. In truth, you need that level of process and communication and the technology. But instead of swinging back to the middle, we went 180 degrees out. And we have been marketing, see, you can be a bad guy, you can be a hacker, and you can make tons and tons of dollars, et cetera, and get in this profession and do wonderful things. The truth is you need both. But as a profession, we've done a terrible job of telling people what this profession is about. And frankly, we tend to tell people what this profession is about in terms that sound sexy and cool rather than terms that sound accurate. And I'm going to go back from a diversity standpoint for this as well. You know, I've been to a conference where someone stood up and said, well, I'm a bad guy. And, you know, I'm crude, rude, socially unacceptable, and I'm a bad guy. And, you know, but I make lots of money. And if you want to be like, if you want to make lots of money and do this, you need to be a bad guy. I've never had problems with diversity in my shop or attracting people in my shop, but I'm not a bad guy. I'm a West Point grad. I'm used to standing in the gap and trying to protect people. And I used to tell people that I do what I do to protect the single mom at Walmart. You know, think about the single mom at Walmart who, you know, is shopping, has got three kids, doing all the right things. It's shopping day. She's clipping your coupons. She goes up to actually swipe her debit card or credit card, and her card is declined because some bad guy stole all her money. And I tell people I line up shoulder to shoulder every single solitary day with some of the biggest, baddest, bravest, boldest people I know to prevent that from happening. That story tends to resonate out there. And more importantly, it tends to resonate with a more diverse group of people out there. It tends to resonate in many cases with minorities who come here and tell me stories about their abuelo or their abuela who got hacked and want to stop that from happening. It tends to resonate on occasion with women who want to come in and want to say, how do I make things better within the environment? You know, and I've attracted in past lives a diverse crew of people as well as a diverse student body by framing the conversation accordingly. Cyber is absolutely not boring. And I think we need to be better at telling that story. Further, I think we need to decriminalize the term hacker. Hacker used to mean exactly what you said, Marco, the person who is being creative. My best scene, if you want to see a movie with the best hacking scene ever, watch Apollo 13. And then what you watch
many
is that
times.
Scene.
Thank you.
Yeah, you watch that scene where he comes in, drops a bunch of parts on the table,
yep,
and said, we need to make this square filter fit in this small round container, and these are all the parts we can use.
Yeah,
that is the classic definition of a hack. Mm-hmm. That is the classic definition of creative thinking. We need to bring that level of energy back to the environment. And if you want to do that sort of thing for a living every single day, that's what we do. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not, oh, I need to have learned to code when I was 8. And if I don't know how to do that, there's no place for me. And when we market about the guy in the hoodie, we create that sort of mindset. or, you know, I need to, you know, have grown up with the iPod, the iPad, and the six devices around here. We create a mindset that says if you're living below certain levels or standards where you don't have access to that, you can't do this. That is categorically not true. And we need to tell that story a little better, in my opinion. Now I'm going to get back off the soapbox.
No, I love it. And we're about to publish a new Unusual Gatherings where two West Point grads joined us. Ron Ross, you probably know, and Bill MacArthur, who is an astronaut.
Yep.
And he didn't use the terms kumquat and pineapple and that, but he very clearly said, when you're on a mission, you need to know what you have in front of you.
Yep.
And very much to that Apollo story, if you don't know what you have to work with, you're not going to come up with a recipe that that succeeds, right?
As a matter of fact, one of his first story, and of course, I want to invite everybody to listen to that, was that he was in charge on the space shuttle mission, on his first mission, to fix what was getting broke. And when you're up there, you don't really have that many choices. You can't go to
can't wander down the hall to Home Depot, yeah, or road to Home Depot, that, and says, you know, I need this.
That's exactly your Apollo 13, and that's the NASA mentality, and that's how people go prepare in space. So I love your passion, Kim. I gotta say it's hard to cut this conversation because I would love to keep going, but I think we're there.
I hope
I didn't derail your conversation. But,
oh no,
it's this, something I this, love.
It's, this is fantastic.
Many stories, and I think to the point of this conversation, as it tends to be on most of the things we talk about on ITSB Magazine, the story matters, right? And the more we can connect it to people in a way that they can relate to it, which you did wonderfully today, the better off we'll be. So with that, Cecilia, wonderful to see you.
Great to see you guys.
Have
thank
you join you. Us again, and then co-host, and Kim, thank you so much for
my honor and privilege.
Bringing your story to us and for doing the good work in training the next generations.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Devo unlocks the full value of machine data for the world's most instrumented enterprises. The Devo Data Analytics Platform addresses the explosion in volume of machine data and the crushing demands of algorithms and automation. Learn more at devo.com. BugCrowd's award-winning platform combines actionable contextual intelligence with the skill and experience of the world's most elite hackers to help leading organizations identify and fix vulnerabilities, protect customers, and make the digitally connected world a safer place. Learn more at bugcrowd.com. We hope you enjoyed this conversation. If you learned something new and this story made you think, then share ITSPmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.